From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Inside. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We've been taking stock of the first half of 2022 and revisiting some of the most meaningful conversations. We begin with California's community college system, which is the largest in the country. Back in March, I spoke with Daisy Gonzalez, a first-generation college student who didn't learn English until the fourth grade and navigated the state's foster care system. When she was emancipated, the barriers were high, but she overcame each and every one. From her start at community college to eventually a PhD, and now second in command at California Community Colleges. Our childhood, it doesn't define us, but it does shape who we become. And your story really is exemplary of that. So can we start from the beginning?
Sure. Thank you for the question. You know, I think we spend a lot of time, certainly when we have had trauma or tragedy in our journeys, surviving it, probably avoiding it. And so for me, you know, as I joined certainly California's community colleges, I went to community colleges throughout my childhood, and certainly in order just to graduate from high school, for me, it's really important to come back and to be able to share my story and to feel empowered by that story, because my story is not unique. In many ways, it's very similar to that of the foster youth, the low-income students, and the first-generation college students that this system actually serves today.
What are you comfortable sharing about your journey through the foster system here in California?
You know, my childhood gave me a front row seat to observe and experience the fundamental role of state public institutions and in the development of our children and in our society. And one of those key institutions was schools. I grew up in foster care, whether I knew it or not, since the age of two. I went in and out of the system, and finally, when I was 13, I had to make a critical decision to be able to speak up for myself. I grew up around a lot of violence, both physical and verbal, and I live in different placements. And what was important as a part of this journey that I've now realized as an adult is that those experiences with the foster care system certainly influence the solutions that I create today as a leader. I grew up surrounded by lawyers and judges and social workers and teachers, you know, all of the kind human beings that made me who I am. And while not every experience was positive, what it did teach me was the critical role of the institutions and then who we serve and how we need to serve people. We serve people to empower them. We treat them with dignity.
Were you an English language learner during that time? Because if so, that adds a whole other dimension to this.
Absolutely. You know, I grew up in an immigrant household. I did not learn English until I was in the fourth grade. And so I was a dual immersion teacher myself. That was one of my first jobs, based and grounded in that experience. So to your question about how does your childhood influence you, I was an English learner. I ended up becoming a dual immersion teacher right out of college because I wanted to give back, and because third grade was one of those critical years in my life to be able to succeed and to complete an education.
Yeah. Especially during the pandemic, we have learned that schools are just so much more than education. I would imagine as a child and as a teenager navigating the foster system, was it that way for you too? Was it more than just education?
Absolutely. You know, when I was 13, I was told by county staff, and these are just the different individuals that you experience as you're a foster youth, I was told you have three options for your life. You're either going to end up dead, pregnant, or in prison by the age of 16. And it makes me really sad to say that the data hasn't really changed in our state. Less than 4% of our students actually earn a four-year baccalaureate degree. This is for foster youth. So in many ways, earning an education saved my life. It was a critical component of the people that surrounded me, what they taught me about serving others, and more importantly, what they taught me about being able to help others, which is really important when you're serving students who have had tragedy and trauma. The big component is really, how do we help them turn pain into courage and strength? Yeah. And one of the biggest ways that you can do that is by showing them how they can help others. So certainly everything from voting to being politically active to volunteering your community, those are key components of the educational experience in growing up in California.
Yeah, being engaged. And you had people in your life that showed you that there were other alternatives than the three that you laid out. What kind of support or mentors did you have as a child and teenager?
Here in California, even today, we have independent living programs, and those are programs that help our foster youth learn everything from how to balance your checkbook, to how to be independent and sign a contract to get housing. I'm very proud to say that I had really incredible mentors. When I entered the foster care system and I was 13 that time around, there was an incredible woman named Connie who created a pilot program to pair foster youth with mentors. I still have that mentor who has known me since I was 13. Her name is Doreen. She's actually the dean of a law school, and she's retiring at the end of this month after a 41-year career in law. Because at one point in time when I was 13, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer because of just the critical role that they played in making sure that I was safe.
I would imagine that she taught you something just so fundamental that one person can make a huge difference. I mean, it's something that is simple and can sound cheesy, but it actually is true and it's meaningful.
She absolutely did, whether she knew it or not. I like to remind her that it was the simple things that she did, right? The first time this Latina immigrant student ate sushi, to seeing an art exhibit at the Getty Museum, being exposed to different things. I often like to share with students and my mentees, you can't become what you don't know exist. And that's really important. That was one thing that she taught me, was just the exposure to different experiences. And through that, she taught me that I could be anything.
I'm just curious, during this time or even throughout your life, did you ever have the chance or even the desire to reconnect with your biological family?
I've had different touch points. Since I was 2 years old, I entered the foster care system. I was returned back and forth, and then finally emancipated at the age of 17. I think as an adult, and what I see in many of the foster youth that I mentor, what is important as we become adults is really more around the community that surrounds us. And I'm really lucky to say that I have mentors, I have friends. For me, my friends are family. And then my team here at the Chancellor's office, they are like a mini family, because for me, family is contributing to a broader goal. And that has been really important to be able to thrive and to help others.
Yeah, and you are one of tens of thousands of stories. There are more than 60,000 children currently in the foster system in California, and each story is very personal and unique. When you left foster care, you were emancipated. And for individuals that are either emancipated or they age out, that can be a dramatic, challenging shift. How did you navigate all of that?
I was really lucky to have a chemistry teacher be a part of my journey. She was my freshman year in high school chemistry teacher, Patricia Barker, at the time. And when I emancipated, I had nowhere else to live. And she said, "Don't worry, you can live with me." There were only about 6 months between emancipation and being able to graduate from high school. And she was really critical for me to not only have a safe place to live, but to have a complete stranger, right? Someone that was a part of my educational journey say, "Listen, you have 6 months. There will be rules, but I need you to go to college." She was that person for me. And now I'm very happy to say that, as an adult, I had the privilege of working on a bill that expanded rights and services and resources for all foster youth in the state until the age of 26. So part of my journey has been working for the state legislature as an assembly budget consultant. And when I was 26, I ended up working as the first and youngest Latina to serve in the assembly budget committee. And that was one of the budget changes that we made. We made sure that, unlike me, when I lost all services, foster youth in this state would have resources until the age of 26.
That is definitely something to be so proud of. And that teacher went well beyond a classroom and education in a traditional sense. You mentioned you're a product of the community college system that has propelled you to a PhD. You've worked at the state legislature. You're now deputy chancellor at California's community colleges. But starting off, let's go back to community college. I would imagine there were financial barriers, even just a lack of logistical knowledge is how to navigate higher education. And there's also a component of resiliency to this. How did you manage all of that as a young adult?
I had a lot of really incredible angels, everyday people, from Ms. Barker saying, "You're going to go to college. You have to figure out what an SAT is," at the time, "and you have to help others complete their essays too. And so a lot of folks have asked me around, you know, who is this angel, Miss Barker? And I ended up creating a chemistry club. And during our lunchtime, we would actually apply to college. And we would each review each other's essays. And it was about telling our story. And that piece is still something that I use today in this journey, certainly something that I use when I was a third grade dual immersion teacher here in Fairfield, you know, helping students understand that their journey is actually a source of courage. And then when I did work for the state legislature, right after literally leaving the classroom, and the reason why I left the classroom was because at the time we had a teacher shortage, and I see not much has changed, but I couldn't even make photocopies. And it was a really difficult community, right? I was serving low-income students, immigrant students, and empowering them meant that at the time I thought, well, our state laws need to change. They need to change a little. And I wanted to bring their stories to Sacramento. And it's something that I now use in the work that we do, right? I seek to empower students in California's community colleges and center their voices, their experiences, which are different from the ones that I had, into the culture and the fabric of our institutions and the ones that we hope to become. But yes, California's community colleges were part of my journey. I went to three different community colleges in LA just to graduate from high school on time. You know, foster youth have a lot of different placements. We miss out on a lot of school because of courts, because of other incidents that happen when you live in a group home as well. And community colleges were there for me then. They were also there for me when I finally did manage to transfer to a four-year institution. Because you're a foster youth, when you do end up transferring, you have nowhere else to go in the summer. And so you have to figure out what are your summer plans. For me, it was getting two or three jobs and going to community colleges so that I can finish earlier because I couldn't afford another year. I couldn't afford to pay for another year.
Wow. Now look at you. You're second in command in the country's largest and most diverse system of higher education. There are more than 100 community colleges in the state, but it is a system, an institution that has historically been white and male at the highest levels. Given this journey that you have been laying out and is remarkable, do you see the consequences that has had on higher education by not having people in power in place that is reflective of the community that they serve?
You know, I think it's the most important piece here is grounding our work and who we serve. And this state currently serves 69% of California community college students are students of color. And being culturally competent, being compassionate, serving people with empathy and dignity does not have to be a lived experience, but it does have to be prioritized when you're designing solutions. I've been very lucky to have mentors like Chancellor Oakley not only asked me to come and serve, but to see as a role model out there. He is the first Latino chancellor that this state has ever seen for California's community colleges, also a product of California's community colleges. And along with that, this year, we are also breaking ground and making history with the first African-American woman as the president of the Board of Governors. So for me, as we think about designing, as I think about your question, it's that ecosystem of what it means to not only understand who we're serving, but to prioritize and have an inclination that it's really about who we're serving. We have 116 community colleges in our system. And this pandemic, you know, nationally and in California, hit our students especially hard. We've seen declining enrollment. We have seeing the challenges with poverty in our system, but also seeing the resiliency of our students, our faculty, and our staff. Many of our students during this pandemic have been on the front lines. They are nurses and first responders. They are the everyday folks that are delivering your food and your meals. That's California, you know? Those are our students. Those are the Californians that we serve.
We're going to take a quick break and continue my conversation with California Community College's Deputy Chancellor, Daisy Gonzalez. You're listening to a special edition of Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. You're listening to a special best of edition of Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're going to resume my conversation with Deputy Chancellor Daisy Gonzalez of California Community Colleges, sharing her story as a foster youth and goals to increase equity and representation. You touched upon declining enrollment and even transfer rates for many people, Like you and Chancellor Oakley and myself, community college can be like a best-kept secret, but those enrollment and transfer rates did drop during the pandemic. Where are these young adults going instead? What is the long-term harm?
Yeah, that's really important for us. It's something that all of our leaders in our 116 community colleges are wrestling with. At the statewide level, for us, certainly for Chancellor Oakley, for our board, for our team, it raises really big concerns about equitable access to success in higher education, as well as the ability to meet our state's workforce needs. Who we serve are the everyday Californians, from career technical education to English as a second language courses to, yes, transfer. And most recently, the state allowed our colleges to offer an increased number of baccalaureate degrees. So we are the best kept secret, and let's make sure that it's not a secret.
Right.
As a part of the journey, I think of who we're serving is further amplifying the work and the knowledge, right? Making sure that folks understand that during this pandemic, the state legislature, the federal government have made really key investments to ensure that we're recovering with equity. Everything from making sure that we have not only education online, but the student supports, things like tutoring and mental health. Those things are also important to a student when they're learning online. On the other hand, there have also been really big investments to make sure that emergency funds go directly to the students' hands so that they can take care of things like rent, transportation, childcare, food. We have seen during this pandemic what it means for our students to try to survive during this pandemic, everything from homelessness to being housing insecure, which is a very large population of who we serve. And then the other big side of that is food. You know, we feel very comfortable talking about food insecurity in K through 12, but in many ways, those are the same students, right? They become our students eventually. And so food insecurity is really big in our system as well.
Yeah. There are food pantries at universities here, including Sacramento State, where we're located, and also stories of students sleeping in their cars, not only at Sac State, but even within the UC system. Given that you have a background in policy at the state legislature before moving to higher education, where have policies fallen short?
You know, I don't like to think about it as falling short, but more of a, where is there always room for improvement? One key component of the opportunity for us to improve is really in the way that we provide direct supports to our students, and that's really financial aid. Financial aid reform in our state has not kept up with who we serve. It is a system that primarily serves working adults, right? Working learners. These are students who are over the age of 24. I know that we could probably all think of different colleagues who have tried to return back to school, but we do have a large percentage of our students who are over the age of 24. We also know that many of our students work one, two, three jobs. That means that they are also working learners. And so our state policies and certainly our federal policies, you heard a little bit about that in President Biden's State of the Union, right? Pell Grant reform. Here at home, the reform and the opportunity is making further changes to our Cal Grant system. Last year, there were some changes that lifted up the age requirements, so the eligibility for our students. 100,000 more students making history qualified for new Cal Grants, but there's more room and more need, more unmet need. We have the lowest tuition across the nation, $46 a unit. But what's important for everyone to understand is if we want community college students to succeed, it's about the supports that you're providing them to afford textbooks, housing, transportation, childcare, because it's a moral imperative, because it's who we serve. We, of course, know broadband and technology has become a lot more important during this pandemic. And that means that our financial aid structures and policies then need to change. And they need to change to meet the unmet needs that our students are having.
All right, you mentioned the federal role in this, so I want to get to cost, because college is expensive, and I understand that it's $46 a unit across community colleges, but you worked multiple jobs to get through. During the State of the Union, President Biden said a national plan to make community college free failed in the social spending bill. Here in California, tuition can be free if students meet certain income requirements. Where do you stand on community college being free for everyone? Many people stop pursuing higher education, master's, PhDs, even a bachelor's, because debt can rival a home purchase.
You know, we serve 70% of all undergraduates in the state of California, and a very large percentage of CSU students, I believe it's 51%, begin their educational journey at a California community college. And it's a little bit lower for UC. I believe 29% of UC students begin their journey at a California community college. So we're a part of that journey for a reason, right? We help students. We are the gateway. We are the front door to higher education to the majority of Californians. Certainly, our board and the Vision for Success calls us to redesign everything with the student in mind. Our position and the work ahead is really designing a student-centered financial aid system. What's really important to note is that while our unit cost, the $46 per unit, is the lowest in the nation, the unmet needs, the sort of the work ahead, is really all the other pieces that I've highlighted: textbooks, housing, transportation, childcare, broadband, technology equipment. At the core of the cost and the transformation is how do we begin to lift and focus our policies on financial need as we are making awards, right? That's truly what it means to have equity in financial aid structures. How do we reduce barriers that are created by age or GPA requirements? How do we cover all quality certificates and associate degrees that are offered by California community colleges? We have a large percentage of our students that are career technical education students, and they currently don't qualify for certain Cal grants. In terms of the other part of your question, you know, the big work here in California is how do we do it so that we are doing it with equity? We are very lucky to have a California Promise College grant. The majority of our students do qualify for their tuition to be covered. But again, the unmet cost are all of the other pieces that you and I know are really what gets in the way of our students succeeding.
Do you think community college should be free for everyone?
I think in California, we are the model. We are the model for free community college because
so is it good? Is it good? Is as it stands now?
I don't know if it's, I would say it currently does not meet all of the needs that our students have. So while we cover the unit cost, what it would mean to help our students here in California, for us, it's not a conversation about being free. For us, it's about the total cost of our students' success.
Well, given that you were the interim chancellor, actually, at the end of last year, as Eloy Ortiz Oakley, he took a sabbatical to assist the Biden administration. I mean, the time was short. It was about 4 months. But you then became the first woman of color leading the community college system, only the second community college chancellor that was a woman. And during those 4 months, you embarked on a listening tour across the state. What did you learn from students?
Thank you for the question. You know, I was deeply honored to serve our system in a different role. I've been in my current role now for 5 years, and the work really has been about prioritizing the student voice. And I learned 3 key things from our students. The first one is this immense need for basic needs, and it changes based on the community. I went to Lassen Community College, a very rural community who had also faced a wildfire. I went to LA Valley College, a very different community, right? One of the campuses that I went to as an undergraduate, and certainly when I was in foster care, LA Valley College was a big part of my journey. Those are 2 very different communities. So the basic needs were critical and yet unique. And then the second big sort of challenge that our students were facing were better access to the educational modalities that were created during this pandemic, right? And so things like broadband, having access to technology, that was a really big need in our students. And the last one that I heard repeatedly across the state was childcare. And all of that comes together in the vision that we have for California's community colleges. What does it mean to center the student voice and the solutions that we create? What would it look like to meet the total cost of success for our students? So again, going past tuition costs, really thinking about the financial resources that need to be in the hands of our students. So everything from textbooks to housing to childcare.
Before we let you go, Deputy Chancellor, you talk a lot about unmet needs. And when you hear unmet, that means work needs to be done. And there are students that are listening to this that are living through those unmet needs. What is one thing that California can do now to help?
You know, the number one thing that we can do now and that I want to encourage everyone to do is to share their story and encourage a student to enroll. Once a student arrives to our doors, there are so many resources that we can connect them to. So the first step is get through the door. We are here to help. I need you to enroll. I need you to go to icangotocollege.org. That is really important to us.
Deputy Chancellor Gonzalez, thank you so much for not only joining us, but sharing your story.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Vicki.
That was my conversation with Deputy Chancellor Daisy Gonzalez of California Community Colleges. Our conversation first aired in March. You're listening to a special best of edition of Insight on CAP Radio.